Uh-huh. After considering it for a second, she popped the giant stack of pepperoni into her mouth.
Oh my God,
she said, her mouth completely full.
I didn't think I could pull that off. My calculations were right.
I'd never seen her act like this before. What are you on? I blurted. Holmes gave me an affronted look, the brunt of which was undercut by her chipmunk cheeks. She chewed for a minute and swallowed.
We found proof. Definitive proof. Haul Nathaniel in, question him, and you'll have your link to Hadrian Moriarty. I'm sure August has him en route to Greystone right now. We'll find my uncle before the day is out. I'm sure of it.
Holmes's instincts hadn't been wrong this fall, when she'd refused to consider August Moriarty as a suspect in Lee Dobson's murder. But this felt different. It wasn't sentiment or nostalgia. It wasn't wishful thinking, either. It felt too easy, I said to her.
Isn't this too easy? All the information you need is under the floorboards?
Holmes rolled her eyes.
Occam's razor, Watson. I've texted August and told him to bring Nathaniel back to Greystone tonight, but he said he won't be home until late. We have some time to kill.
She was trying to distract me. I knew she was, but the glee in her voice was contagious.
Well, what do you want to do?
A date, she said.
A date? I blinked. What kind of date? Are we talking, like, dancing, a movie, a soda shop?
Better.
Shy, suddenly, she dropped my gaze and looked out the window.
Something, well, something I love. Something we can only do here.
A German something.
Well, when in Rome, she said.
And that was how we ended up at the Christmas market at Charlottenburg Palace, 3 days before the holiday itself. At first glance, it looked like a sea of candles bobbing in a dark pool. Tents, white tents, rows and rows of them lit from within like clouds of daylight in a line, all topped with light-up stars and wound with garlands. People were crowded around them in earmuffs and gloves, drinking from mugs and eating giant frosted cookies. It was silly and charming and a little bit weird, and honestly, I loved Christmas. I always had. I was missing my family something fierce tonight, thinking of wrapping presents around the fireplace back at home. And then there was Holmes, who was acting like she'd had a near-death experience and come back to tell me all about the light. She was relieved, I realized. Bone-crushingly relieved. When, in our last case, she'd realized August wasn't to blame, she'd acted the same way. Talked non-stop. Ate everything. Ate everything.
Have you had Stollen?
She asked me, pulling me over to a booth staffed by a jolly old man right out of a Hallmark special.
Was kostet das?
She asked, pointing to the both of us. The man answered, and she pulled a handful of euro coins out of her pocket.
What am I eating?
I asked her as she handed me a slice of jewel-dotted bread.
Stollen,
she repeated impatiently.
Sort of like fruitcake, only it isn't wretched. Milo usually ships it home for the holidays. That and a fir candle to light up next to the artificial tree.
Gingerly, I tried it. It wasn't bad at all. Cookies next, then mulled wine that smelled like cinnamon and cloves. We wandered through the stalls, eating from brown paper bags, getting our gloves covered in crumbs. We'd stopped on the way so that Holmes could retrieve her jacket from Piquant, the restaurant we'd eaten at with Philippa, and now she'd flipped the collar up to keep the snow off the back of her neck. Then, with a self-conscious laugh, she reached over to do the same to mine.
"Otherwise it'll go down the back of your shirt,"
she said, her fingers brushing against my hair.
"Don't want that."
I shivered. This side of the market was playing Handel over its speakers, but as we wound over to the giant light-up Ferris wheel, the music changed to American Top 40. The tail end of a song about sneakers, and then, "Oh, my God," I said to her. "They're playing L.A.D.
I think I just heard the 12-year-old girl behind me say the same thing.
"Shut up," I said, "or I won't take you on the Ferris wheel."
"You're assuming that I want to go."
"Of course you do." I paused. "Do you?" She smiled crookedly at me, her mug of mulled wine clasped between her hands. A little bit of powdered sugar was on the tip of her nose.
"Yes," she said. "I want to."
We stomped our feet next to each other in the line. She was doing this thing where she'd lean against my arm for a second, but if I looked down at her, she'd pull herself away like a house cat caught on its back.
"I want car number 3, she said, when we neared the front.
"Why?" I asked.
"Haven't you been paying attention? It's the one that's the swingiest."
"Swingiest isn't a word." She smiled at me, that one particular smile I hardly ever saw. The one that could open padlocks, Yale locks, bank vaults. The one that was a trap door down into everything. I reached out and touched the tip of her nose. My finger came away white with sugar.
"It is now," she said quietly.
The ride operator was appropriately toothless, and the boys above us kept throwing popcorn down at our heads, and when our car stopped, it didn't stop at the top to give us a view of the city. Instead, we jerked down to the stop before we disembarked, the perfect place to stare up at everyone else's feet.
"It only goes for 2 minutes, for €5 each."
She dug through her brown paper bag.
"I wish I had something to throw myself."
"You've never been to a carnival before?"
"I rode the London Eye with my Aunt Araminta. She believed in taking my brother and me on excursions."
Holmes made a face.
"She gave us clothes for Christmas, a size too large to grow into. She's the sort of person air quotes were invented for."
"Leander said that the Moriartys killed her cats," I told her, and then blanched. I hadn't meant to bring that up, not just when we were on the other side of this case.
"But are we on the other side of this case?"
a voice in my head asked. "But when we were getting along so well..." But Holmes just nodded.
"Totally did her in. She sells honey now from her apiary, doesn't talk much to anyone. I haven't seen her in 2 or 3 years.
Our spangled metal car tipped forward, then back.
"Are they ever going to let us off this thing?"
"I thought you liked the swinginess."
"It's making me nauseous."
"Just close your eyes and enjoy the LAD. It's Girl, I See You Dancin'."
"You knew the name."
"Girl, I See You Dancin', Something Something Ransom."
"Oh, come on. You love it." "I love it. I think that's your job."
I wrinkled my nose at her.
"I know your deepest, darkest secrets, Charlotte Holmes. Don't you give me that."
The smile on her face went frozen and forced all at once, like a gust of cold wind from the north, and as I opened my mouth to ask why, the ride lurched forward again. 8. We made it back to Holmes's room around midnight to find August Moriarty waiting at the door, hat literally in hand.
"Where's Nathaniel?"
she asked him, an edge already in her voice.
"I let him go," he said.
She started, like she was keeping herself from lunging at him.
"You ask for my trust, for all of our trust, and then you go and drag away the man I want to question, and you announce yourself and everything you know to Hadrian Moriarty and..."
"We didn't see Hadrian. My brother's gone to ground, Holmes," August said. "I don't know where he is. Nathaniel doesn't know where he is, and neither does Milo, though his being on a red-eye flight does limit his resources somewhat."
"So why did that compel you to let Nathaniel go?" I asked him. "We have a stack of invoices here for forgeries Nathaniel's students made that he sold to your older brother. We have a business card for David Langenberg, Leander's alias that we found in Nathaniel's apartment. And you let him rabbit, just like that?"
"Because he doesn't know where Leander is," August said. "And this has never been about the Langenberg paintings. I don't care what you found."
"You're sure he doesn't know?"
Holmes took a step toward him.
"You're sure?"
August shook his head as if trying to clear out noise.
"I'm sure." "How?" I asked. "How are you being so cavalier about this?"
"I pulled up pictures of Nathaniel's elderly parents. They're in a home north of the city. I had its name within seconds, its address. I threatened to kill them tonight if I even imagined he was lying." His voice broke.
"Do you remember what my last name is? or do you need an explanation for why he believed me?
There's a link, I said to Holmes. Anything, anything to defuse this situation.
We have the link. We know your uncle was posing as a Langenberg.
We don't know that, she said.
We don't know anything.
But...
Go to bed, August,
Holmes said, opening her door. She shut it behind us so emphatically it was like she was sealing off a tomb.
That was loud, I said.
There isn't anything left for us to do tonight. We have to wait until tomorrow.
Are you sure?
To my embarrassment, I stifled a yawn. To my surprise, she turned to look at me. Really look at me, like she was straining to see some faraway sign.
Watson, you look like hell. Haven't you been sleeping?
Not since October. I leaned against the wall. It felt good to put my weight against a solid surface. Is this you saying you're worried about me, or are you really feeling the hard truths thing tonight? Holmes started to snap back a reply, then stopped herself. Very deliberately, she reached up to put her fingers against my face.
I'm worried about you, she admitted.
It didn't sound practiced, that admission, as it did when August was trying to be nice. Really, I didn't think either he or Charlotte Holmes were nice at their core. At their best, they were kind. It was that kindness that prompted Holmes to lead me over to the ladder to her lofted bed.
It's more comfortable than the cot, but you know that. You've been sleeping there.
What are you going to do? I climbed up and got under the covers.
I don't know, she said. Plan B. Whatever Plan B is.
Don't stay up too late.
I won't.
She stared up at me, one hand on the ladder. She'd undone the top three buttons of her shirt, and I could see the white line of her collarbone.
I might be tired later.
Okay, I told her as cautiously as I could. I might still be here. Did I want her to climb into bed with me? Did she want to? Would knowing the answer to either question change what we were going to do? Across the room, she rummaged through her suitcase for her pajamas, then called out that she was changing. I turned my back, trying not to listen to the rustle and slip of fabric, trying to remind myself how tired I was. I was tired, I realized, with some wonder. I'd been exhausted and unable to sleep for so long. Honestly, I'd never forgotten what Lucien had said to us in Bryony Downs's apartment.
It's good to know what matters to you, he'd told Holmes. So very little does. My brother didn't. Your own family doesn't. But this boy...
Meaning me. The pressure point. The weak point. A thought I tortured myself with on the nights that I stuffed my head under the pillow and tried not to feel the dot of a sniper's rifle on my back. The door opened and shut softly. Holmes had slipped out, and my eyes were already closing. Before I passed out, I took out my phone. We're closing in, I texted my father, though I didn't think that was true. Will you please reconsider sending Leander's emails? I won't read them. I'll have Milo skim them for what we need. Pretense, all of it. He knew I'd read every word, just as Milo knew that Lucien was targeting his parents, and I knew, for a certainty, that neither Holmes or I knew what we wanted at all. When I woke, it was hours later. I could tell even in that windowless room. My stomach was growling and someone was speaking. A male voice. I sat up too quickly.
Lottie, I'm fine. I'll see you soon.
The voice again, tinnier this time and then broken into pieces.
Lottie, I'm fine. Lottie, I'm fine.
Holmes sat in a small oasis of light. She was cross-legged on the camp bed with a laptop, a lamp beside her, and her hair hung in her face as she hammered on the keys.
"Damn it,"
I heard her say.
"God damn it."
"How's it going?" I asked, and she jumped.
"Watson,"
she said.
"One of the techs showed me how to peel apart a recording into layers to isolate background noise. I've been working with Leander's phone message. What time is it?"
"I have no idea." I checked my phone. It was 10 in the morning.
"Did you find anything?" "There's something. An echo. The kind that..."
She went to play it again, and then, without warning, she slammed her laptop shut.
"Shit,"
she gasped, exhaling through a hand.
"Shit."
"Come up here," I didn't know if the thought would be at all comforting, clambering up into bed with me. From the look she'd leveled me with, she was skeptical, too. Not like that. Just come here. She climbed up the ladder and sat next to me, our backs against the wall, surveying her little kingdom.
Lean has been texting me, she said.
Any news?
Why are we in Germany? Germany is lame,
she said in her quoting voice.
And also, Tom has started wearing that nuclear winter body spray, which has Lena simultaneously turned on and disgusted.
Sounds about right, I said. She smiled. We both knew that she adored her roommate, and that we would never mention that fact out loud. Every room you settle into looks like this, I said instead. The clutter, the weird textbooks. Where do you even get those textbooks? And the lab table, always with the lab table and the blowing things up. It's like all of it stays in some little box inside you that bursts open when you take a moment to settle down.
That's precious, Watson.
I grinned. It's true, you know it is. You're like a turtle with your world on your back.
There's not a lot you can control, you know. Where you're born, who your family is, what people want from you, and what you are underneath it all. When you have so little say in it all, I think it's important to exercise a measure of control when given the opportunity.
She smiled, ducking her head.
So I blow things up.
Did you hear that? You almost said something profound. You came so close. She pushed her sock feet against the edge of the bed.
Leander liked to talk about the importance of control.
No one would ever guess it. He's famously lazy, you know. He lives like an absolute sloth. Goes from one house he owns to another, violin in tow, picking up the odd crime when it suits him.
Living off his trust fund, eating out in restaurants, going to parties.
She said the word with such disdain that I choked on a laugh. Parties? You know what they say, first the parties, and before you know it, they're on to the murdering. She rolled her eyes.
Watson, some people don't like to read, or they don't like sport. They don't like the routine of it, or the slow pace, or the fast pace, or the noise, whether it seems too intellectual or too base. But I'm an anomaly if I don't like parties or restaurants. It's wrong if I don't like the idea that there are a demanded set of responses and that I'll be judged on how well I can provide them.
Putting on a little girl voice, she said,
Yes, please. I'd like the salmon. It looks lovely. Could it bother you for another soda? Tar?
I hate the idea of performing a role when I haven't written the script myself. I need more of a purpose than I want to get a chocolate pudding without the waitress calling the police on me.
I made a mental note to dig up the rest of that story later.
Leander excels at that kind of thing, she said. Because he has some genetic aberration that makes him good with people. They like him. They trust him almost immediately. And because he can pass as a normal sort of man, he can be invisible, left alone. He says the right things and people approve of him and move on.
She looked at me.
I've always wanted to be invisible, and because I want to be, it's impossible.
What kind of life do you want for yourself? I asked her. After all this? After school? After Lucian? She thought about it for a long minute. I had no idea what she'd say. Holmes had always had such a tenuous connection to her surroundings, like she was more real than anything around her. At school, she walked around with a backpack full of books, but they were like props in a stage play. I knew, of course, that she had to go shopping for shoes and shampoo, but I couldn't imagine a world where she did so, and last week I'd watched her trimming her hair in the sink and wondered if she taught herself to do it from a YouTube video, because I couldn't imagine either of her parents showing her how. But I couldn't imagine her looking at YouTube either. Maybe it was just me. Maybe she was so endlessly fascinating because the world hadn't ever scratched up against me the way it did her, leaving her raw and unhappy and wanting to disappear. She used grocery store brand shampoo, I knew, because I'd used her shower back in Sussex, and I'd stood there smelling it, the water beating down on my face, because it was impossible that a girl like that shopped at the same stores I did, because, despite my best efforts not to, I'd romanticized her beyond all sense. Because even if I wasn't in love with her, I couldn't see myself loving anyone else.
I want an agency, she was saying. A detective agency. A small one. In London, because it's the only proper place to live. We'll take back over Baker Street. It's a museum now. None of my family wants to live there. It's too gauche for them. But it would make you happy, I think. And anyway, it has all the original furnishings, so we wouldn't have to shop for them. Furniture stores are horrid, aren't they? And we'll take cases. You can deal with the clients, comfort them, take notes. We'll solve them together, and I'll handle the finances, since you're so terrible at maths. She paused. It sounds childish when I put it that way. I imagine in practice it'll feel rather adult.
Is that it, then? I asked her. Came out quiet, though my thoughts were loud and cluttered. I'd never imagined that she'd daydreamed like this, not the way I had. Is that what you want? I'm in those plans when you imagine them?
If we both make it that long.
She tipped her head back against the wall to look at me.
You're determined to take on all this responsibility for mistakes that I've made. I'm beginning to think you like having a target on your back. So if you insist on staying, I might as well make a place for you. I kissed her then. I kissed her slowly, patiently. It was always too desperate between us, the clock nearing zero, the last secret about to slip out, or too cautious, or too clinical, an experiment gone wild and wrong. It was a huge, impossible thing, kissing your best friend, and each time we'd tried, we'd managed to fuck it up so badly that the next felt even more impossible. I wanted to give her an out. I always did, especially after Dobson. But God, it was hard. When she leaned into me, her fingers tracing the hollow of my throat, I had to clench my hands not to touch her back. Then she slipped a hand underneath my shirt, and I forced myself to pull away. Her breathing was coming fast. What if we weren't doing this? If we were just friends? You'd still come along? You'd be there with me, in London? Say you would?
We've never been just friends, though, have we? She smoothed out the sheet between us, avoiding my eyes.
You wouldn't want me either way, then? You wouldn't want me as just your friend?
You're asking me for everything.
Everything doesn't have to mean this, she said, her voice breaking, and when I reached out to touch her, she flinched away. Everything is a minefield, Jamie. I don't know when I'm going to make a misstep. Maybe it'll come 2 years from now, and what then? If you've already shackled yourself to me, will you resent me if I stop wanting to be touched? If one day I wake up, and it's there, my own private hell is back and everywhere around me, and I won't let you ever kiss me again. You wouldn't be able to leave me at that point. You're an honorable man.
But I know it. No one could sustain that. Bit by bit, you'd go.
She laughed.
God, I just want to burn it all down now so I can know the worst thing that could happen, so I can control it.
I stared at her.
You'd what?
Tell me to leave?
Or I could sleep with you.
The look in her eyes was cold.
That would have the same ultimate effect. Making you leave? Ruining it all?
She was pushing me away. She had veered too close, and now she was overcorrecting, and she was overcorrecting with knives. Oh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit there another second and listen to her say these things, and horrifyingly, I was still turned on. I needed her as far from me as possible. Get out.
This is my room. You're in my bed. Where do you want me to go?
Anywhere else. I can't... Get out, Charlotte. An awful moment passed, then another, and when she climbed down the ladder, she walked straight out the door. All the time we'd been talking, my phone had been buzzing with texts. They were from my father, apparently. It was 6 a.m. in the States. I seized on it now as a distraction, anything to keep my mind occupied.
Why are you asking me again? I told you already why I won't send them.
Dad, I wrote, I don't see any other way. Milo's in Thailand. Holmes just ran out on me. I can't make bricks without clay. No response. Unless you can come out here and look for him, I don't know how else we're going to get Leander back. I'll send them. I stared at his text for a long minute.
Are you sure?
Yes. You should know that you'll be staying at my house for every school break until you're 50.
Noted, I said, channeling Holmes without thinking much about it. When I realized I had, I turned the ringer off and stuffed my phone in my pocket. I lay back down and forced myself to try to get some sleep. Forced myself to stop listening for her. She'd come back in, or she wouldn't, and either way, I couldn't face the world yet. What would I do? Go console August Moriarty for threatening someone who might have kidnapped Leander? I finally accomplished it. Sleep, though it was the middle of the day. My dreams galloped away from me. They were soft and threatening all at once, incomprehensible in their noise. When I woke, I felt around for my phone. It was dinner time. The day had slipped away. I needed to wash my face, get my head on straight. I ran into August in the corridor, sending a series of rapid-fire texts of his own. He looked exhausted. "Rough day," he asked. "I could ask you the same thing. Where's Holmes?" He waved the question off. "I saw her a few hours ago. She looked like she was off to draw blood. What did she learn while I was out? She wouldn't say." I made a non-committal noise. "Anyway, I had some information for her," he said. "A friend of mine came through with an address. It's a party spot some of the art dealers go to. Turns into a semi-respectable kind of gallery during the day. It's Monday, so it very well might be dead, but I thought it might be worth a look. It's a place my brother Hadrian might pop up. Lots of artists, lots of coke, that sort of thing." I didn't think I'd heard him right. "You told Holmes that?" "Yeah," he said, still looking at his phone. "Oh, I thought we'd maybe check it out tonight." "Where is she now?" August shrugged. "Getting dinner." "Back up. You just effectively told a clearly upset Charlotte Holmes where to find coke in a strange city." August gave me a hard look. "Cuddling her is a terrible idea, you know. Charlotte always knows how to find coke. She's a recovering drug addict. How do you think that works? I trust her to know her limits. You can't really do much else." "You can't." I got up in his face. "You knew her for how many months when she was 14? What kind of limits do you think she has?" "My brother," he growled, "is an addict, so yes, I do know something about it, and unless you just completely shattered her world in half, I can't imagine this being a situation that..." He trailed off. All at once, the blood went out of his face. "Oh my God, Jamie, what have you done?" 9. All I could think in the back of the taxi was, there needs to be a German compound word for feeling both guilty and enraged. Holmes had said just hours ago that I was always willing to take on the responsibility for her mistakes. Here I was, proving her right. What rankled me the most was that August had immediately asked what I had done, as though I'd been callous enough to reach in with my two hands and break her heart. She'd done that herself, hadn't she? She'd said I'd leave her if she was hurting. She'd said I'd sleep with her and run. God, I was going to throw up. I fumbled for the controls to try to crack the window and let in some air. The cabbie started ranting at me in German until August intervened, leaning between the seats to reason with him. Their voices grew louder and louder, and I thought I'd puke right there on the floor. I focused my breathing, the way I did during rugby drills, until my stomach stopped roiling. "Distract me. Where exactly are we going? Who gave you this information?" August settled into his seat, glaring at the back of the driver's head. "It's at an art squat. It used to be an old department store, and then it was a Nazi prison. Now it's almost like a city unto itself. There's a cafe, a cinema, ateliers. It's a shared space, and sometimes they'll do an open studio night. You walk through with a glass of wine, look at what the artists are working on. If you're a dealer, it's a good chance to see what's out there, though it's best if you keep those intentions to yourself. I don't love businessmen." "You sound like you've done this before." He smiled grimly. "Dead man hobbies. My name around here is Felix, by the way." "Felix? Really?" "Shut up, Simon," he said in such an uncanny impression of Holmes that I couldn't stop myself from laughing. August had the cabbie drop us half a block away, so we approached the building from the rear. It sat on a low, grassy hill, a huge, Frankensteined building against the darkening sky. I could hear music playing as we approached, though I couldn't pinpoint from where.
The doors were a panicked red, covered in glitter and nails and little paintings of eyes. I hesitated, my hand on the knob.
Wait.
With an expert hand, August pushed my hair back from my face.
Button your shirt up to the collar. Tuck it in. Cuff your pant legs. No further. And ditch your socks. You wear your trainers without them. You don't speak much, but not because you're scared, all right? You're bored. Get a drink in one hand and scroll on your phone with the other.
Did you learn this from Holmes or the other way around? I asked him as I looked for a place to stash my socks.
We had remarkably similar childhoods, August said, his eyes as hard and blank as stones.
Let's go. The building was strangely lit, with staircases that crawled up along the walls. I didn't have any trouble imagining it as an old-time department store. The walls had a tall, molded look to them, and the staircases were wide enough to hold a steady stream of shoppers. But the paint had all chipped away. Chunks of the walls were missing, like an angry hand had scooped them out. Now everything was painted electric blues and yellows, the walls and the windows and the stretching ceilings. And while most of the murals were abstractly beautiful, here and there I caught a glimpse of a drawn-on face hidden inside the paint, its eyes watching me.
August? The hair on my arms was standing up.
I know, he said, and he held a hand up while he listened.
The music's coming from up above. The third floor, maybe. We'll try up there.
We climbed the stairs slowly. August assured me the building was structurally sound, but there was something so precarious about a place that had been repurposed so many times, like its essence had been stripped bare in the process. On the second landing, we stepped to the side as a crowd of tattooed girls pushed past us, laughing. One of them shot the kind of smile at August that girls at Sherringford sometimes aimed at me. False walls had been built throughout the third floor, breaking up the giant space into smaller rooms. Studios, I thought. August had called them ateliers. None of the walls reached the ceiling, so you could see the cluster of lights each artist had set up to illuminate their space. A table was set up near the stairs, and August filled two plastic cups with vodka and soda and handed one to me. His eyebrow lifted slightly.
Don't talk, the look said, and don't drink this either.
He shambled along slowly, sticking his head into studios, greeting people in German.
Ja, he'd say, yes, and jerk his head at me with an apologetic-sounding murmur. Then we'd stand for a minute while he chattered at some shaved-head boy about his giant metal sculpture of a pickle. I kept scrolling down my phone. I had a text from Lena.
Where are you guys? What happened to London? So bored.
I ignored it and instead pulled up the collection of Leander's emails, but I couldn't pay any attention to those either.
I was listening for the edges of Holmes's voice. I noticed that August always kept himself turned toward the atelier's open door so he could see if she walked by. Slowly, we made our pilgrimage. A set of televisions, all playing black-and-white newsreels from the 1940s while disco music blared. A set of toes made from ceramic and gold, arranged on a pink platter to look like snack food. Tiny paintings of naked girls presented by a smug-faced man I wanted to punch in the throat. Instead, I scrolled through Leander's emails, not really reading them. All this to get them, and now I was too sick to focus.
Dear James, each one began. Dear James, dear James. Then I came across one that began, Dear Jamie, dated early this December, and for a minute I let myself stop listening for Charlotte.
Dear Jamie, don't know why I had the urge to write to you by that name. No one's called you that since I have. I've been spending all my time hanging around these art school teachers and their little student flocks. They all have so much overwhelming affection for each other, these students, like they're all drowning and simultaneously holding each other's lifelines. Honestly, I don't see how they don't all end up at the bottom of the lake that way. But here they are, welding and sculpting and drawing under their teacher's benevolent eye. Nathaniel even goes to their parties. I think he fancies himself a little in love with me, which is good for my purposes, but, of course, terrible for his. It's always a bad idea to fall in love with your dealer.
I hoped he was referring to dealing art and not to drugs. Though, watching the eyes of the artists around me, the lines between those worlds seemed blurred. Some were sharp as tacks, tour-guiding their work, teasing August in German about something that made him blush. And some sat in the corner, smiling, 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 their hands clasped in their laps like it was the only thing that could keep them from flying apart. Another studio. It felt like an hour had passed, but since I was staring at my phone, I knew it had only been 10 minutes. It was taking everything in me not to chuck it at this painter's head and start scaling the walls, calling Holmes's name. "There's a really good chance that she's fine," I told myself. "She's almost always fine." But the painter was monologuing at August, using his hands to explain something, and so I settled into a plastic chair to read the rest of Leander's email. "I hear Hadrian's name everywhere. I can't stress to you how much of a fortune he's made, and while I don't think he's involved in this particular Langenberg fiasco, I do know he has connections I could use to push the case along at a more reasonable clip. Milo's been keeping me informed, but only so I can keep myself out of Hadrian's way. Honestly, I wish my niece could time her meltdowns more appropriately. We've had a détente with the Moriartys for almost a century. Of course, you managed to talk me into an art crime case just after we've burned the white flag. I always thought the whole thing would be worth it if Charlotte and August had really gone whole hog on the Montague-Capulet romance. Imagine that story. Still, he wound up dead, and my poor girl wound up banished. So I suppose it has shades of Romeo and Juliet after all. If I sound flip, it's because I feel flip. I don't know how much longer I can live as David Langenberg. He has horrible taste in ties, and his studio flat is freezing. Not to mention that my sister-in-law is once again ill. Fibromyalgia, wretched disease. And without her income, honestly, I'm a bit concerned that Alistair won't be able to hold on to the family home. Not with the way he's been spending. I'm due for a visit anyway, so I'll see what I can do. He's always been a good help in my cases. And I'd like to finally meet your son. I just wish we were smoking those ridiculous French cigarettes in our Edinburgh garret again, setting off the smoke alarm. And your cooking was awful, but God knows I can't do it for myself. I miss you, James. Take care of yourself. I'd been expecting something much more clinical, the kind of step-by-step analytical exercise that Sherlock Holmes was always telling Dr. Watson he should write instead of his stories. But these, they weren't case updates so much as letters, the kind you wrote to someone you knew so well you could imagine them beside you even when they were across an ocean, living out another life. My father had cut out his own replies. I tried to imagine them. Of course he'd been worried when Leander had stopped writing to him. It sounded like he was Leander's only lifeline in a difficult, months-long case. He'd been living as David Langenberg. As someone related to the artist? Someone with a financial stake in what happened to Langenberg's new work? That email had been near the bottom of the set. There were only two more after that. "Dear James, I had an interesting encounter this evening. On the way out of my flat, when I had hardly put on my Langenberg persona, I was almost run down by a Professor Siegler. We'd plans to meet for dinner, so it wasn't a surprise to see him there. I know I haven't really spoken to you about the particulars of my relationship with Nathaniel. My relationship. David's, more like, and you'll forgive me my modesty. His modesty? Suffice it to say that a certain amount of romantic promise had to be made to ensure his continued interest in our little project. We've never been in a position where I ran my hands through his hair. Nathaniel is a handsome fellow. He kissed me on my front step. He'd surprised me with flowers, and I decided to play it up. I put my arms around his neck. I can't write to you about this. You know my feelings on this and every subject, Jamie. I still dream about you sometimes, you know, but I suppose I can't write to you about that, either. I pulled a hand over my eyes, and then I kept reading. He was wearing a wig. I hid my surprise, but while I'm too good at this game to show it on my face, I think he could feel the shift in mood. But we went out for currywurst down the road, as we've done a few times before, and discussed the fortune we were making from his students, from his own work. Do you know, I've come to love Langenberg's paintings, even when they're done by Nathaniel's hands. There's an ache in them, a loneliness, an isolation. Is it pathetic to say that I have art in the blood? I do. I am an artist. My medium is unseen, but I am one all the same.
I want to see him paint a Langenberg, not just because I don't think he's the one who's been painting them, this blue-eyed Nathaniel with his twice-broken nose. I don't think Nathaniel is Nathaniel at all. He looks like a blurred version of his photo on the school website. Him and not him. I've spent the night watching these odious interviews online. Did you know that Hadrian Moriarty has that same nose? And yet they look nothing alike. I've felt that face. I've had my hands in his hair. I think I might just be going mad. Maybe it's all this isolation making me paranoid. I'm not sure. But I can't face the indignity of asking my nephew for his assistance. I'm going to the family home tomorrow. I need to see my brother. August was trying to get my attention, but I shook my head tightly. There was one more email to read. It was dated 2 days later. Dear James, I'm sorry I didn't write you yesterday. I'm at the family home, remembering how to be myself, trying to shed the last of this monkish grifter. It's good to see your son. He takes after you in almost every way, and like you, he's in over his head. Charlotte is different. Wary, untrusting. She'd never been very forthright, but the sort of animal fear is new, I think. It doesn't have anything to do with your Jamie, and still it does, somehow. I caught Charlotte alone this afternoon. We had a long talk about her father. Certain changes are going to be made in that house, and she needed to be aware. That girl. Strong chin, strong voice. She understood immediately. Would it mark me as weak if I told you that sometimes, in my cups, I pretend that she's my daughter and not Alistair's? There's more to sort out here. Finances, Charlotte's schooling. Emma's in a situation, and they've called in a doctor. There's more to it than that, but that's all I should say. Privacy, you know. I'll be back to Berlin as soon as I'm able. Happy Christmas. Roast some chestnuts for me. That was it. The last one. It was so hard to wrench myself back to the present. I made an effort to remember, to put words to the cold twist of panic in my stomach. Holmes is here. We're looking for her. You have no idea how you're going to find her. And Hadrian Moriarty. Was he Nathaniel Ziegler? I thought myself a genius when I picked him out of the crowd, when he invited me back to his loft. Nathaniel feigned panic when I mentioned Leander's name, and I thought, yes, a sign that I found the man I've been looking for, and had no idea how right I was. Was Hadrian masquerading as Nathaniel? All the time, or only for these meetings? Was he teaching college classes, or was he just meeting Leander in that empty, echoing faculty housing at night? It was a half-formed hunch in Leander's email. He didn't think he was right. But God, what if he was? Reason through it, Watson. Because August Moriarty had seen Nathaniel last night and let him go. What if he had been conspiring with his family all along? What if he and Nathaniel hadn't gone to see Hadrian because Nathaniel was Hadrian? What if all of this was a ploy to get us where Lucien Moriarty wanted us? Frantically, I scrolled up through the previous emails. Looked through them faster now, all pretense gone. We were still standing in that same damn atelier, and when I glanced up at August, his attention was fixed raptly on the artist's face as he spoke. His own voice had grown quieter. I took a look around me. This artist was interested in painting more traditionally than the others we'd seen. At least, his canvases weren't flashing neon lights or cut up into tiny strips. They were portraits. Each had a dark head, looking to the side, the expression obscured. All charcoals and grays with flashes of eggshell white. What the paintings depicted was different from the false Langenbergs we'd seen, but they all had a definite similarity to the last of August. The artist didn't look like Nathaniel Ziegler. He didn't look like Hadrian Moriarty either. And maybe they were one and the same. This guy was all of 18. When he saw my expression, August held a finger up to the artist. "More vodka?" he asked. "Then we'll come back." I had to keep a lid on my suspicions for now. We had to find Holmes. "August Moriarty kidnapped you," a voice in my head whispered. "And you still thought he was on your side. How could you be so stupid?" "August," I hissed outside the studio's entrance, but he shook his head tightly. "Later," he mouthed.
As we wound our way back to the table of drinks, I wondered if Holmes was even here. Maybe she'd stolen herself away to a coffee shop somewhere to think. Maybe she was still in Greystone HQ, playing scales on her violin, having shaken off our fight right after it happened. Maybe she'd done the same thing, for once, and called someone to talk it over. Though who, I didn't know. No, I needed to focus on the now. I felt like she was here somewhere, and from the look on his face, he felt it too. "Bathroom?" he said, and pointed to a door far across the cut-up room. "Since you asked?" I nodded. We'd split up then. "Trust him for now," I reminded myself. "You'll have to deal with this later." I crept slowly toward the restroom, looking up from my phone to throw quick glances down the aisles. There were voices, everywhere voices, but I didn't hear Holmes's, which could mean nothing. I remembered the time she'd dragged herself under my father's porch and taken the rest of her stash all at once, sitting in the cold dirt like a blank-faced doll. It had been like pulling teeth to get her to talk, until she opened herself up to spill out everything. One long, black flood of confession. The ateliers were fewer here, and the suspended walls held dark little dens instead. Couches and a television playing Netflix. A more elaborate bar with rack after rack of liquor bottles reaching up to the false ceiling. The wall behind it, chalkboard painted and covered in strange little sunbursts. A few that were empty of everything but people laughing. People dressed like artists and people wearing suits. I wondered about those strange little open spaces. Who owned them, if anyone? Who decided who came in or went out? And still, I didn't see her anywhere. Until I did. She was the golden-haired girl in a sea of men. My gaze had skipped right over her, and then I'd seen those eyes of hers, colorless and cold and strange. Quickly, I backtracked and grabbed another cup, sloshing cranberry juice into it with shaking hands. "She seemed fine," I told myself. "She's talking. She's happy. It's fine." And I tried to summon up the confidence I'd need to wander into a room full of strangers and pull her out. Where was August? I couldn't see him. I didn't know what her cover was or what she was doing, or God, even if she would come with me if she saw me. I approached again, slowly. I didn't want to scare her off. At the edge of the crowd, I dodged the waving arms of a bearded guy ranting about Banksy and put myself into Holmes's line of sight. She didn't seem to see me. As I watched, she plucked an offered cigarette from its pack. "Anyone got a light?" she asked in her low, hoarse voice. These artists spoke English then, or at least recognized the gesture, because three different men fumbled out their lighters. Holmes leaned forward into someone's gold-plated Zippo, and for the barest second, she locked eyes with me. Mouthed, "Not yet," jerked her head. August must have read the signals, too. "I didn't think this was your kind of scene," he said loudly, emerging from behind me to take the cup from my hand. "Thanks for getting me a drink. I lost you in the crowd." One of the men ran a finger over Holmes's bare shoulder, and she giggled. "Is this your kind of scene?" "No," he said, low in his throat, and it wasn't in response to my question. "I know that man." "Michael!" August called with a wave. The closest man to Holmes, the one with the most muscles and the least gray hair, saw August and gave him a cursory wave back. He clearly wasn't interested in anything August had to say. Instead, he bent to whisper in Holmes's ear. She beamed up at him. "Oh, where?" I heard her ask. "That's Hadrian's bodyguard," August murmured. "His personal bodyguard. He doesn't work for Milo. I didn't know he'd be here tonight." "Is that how you know this place? You've been here with your brother, Hadrian?" August nodded, the barest movement. "Is your brother here?" A hesitation, and August shook his head no. He had been. He had been talking to his criminal cretin of an older brother all this time, under our noses. I could feel my hands seizing at my sides, wanting to strangle him, if we weren't in public. "Michael," he said to me, loud enough to broadcast. "Come on, let's go get a drink." The giant man held up his cup in response as he walked away. Holmes was already tripping after him, her fingers tangled with his.
Call your brother, you jackass, I told August. Tell him to get his bodyguard home. I'll follow her. I felt torn in a way I couldn't remember feeling before. In the past, I'd always respected her boundaries, especially when she was in disguise, trawling for information. Either I followed her lead, or stayed out of it entirely. My stakes in this situation were lower. My stakes were always lower. My father may have asked us to ask after Leander, but he wasn't my uncle. I might have been in Holmes's house when it happened, but it wasn't my mother that Lucien was poisoning. I had tried to convince myself that it was our mission. I was wrong. But it was my best friend who was raped. My best friend who did coke and oxy and anything else that wasn't bolted down. She was also the one who could always take care of herself, but here she was, following the giant German bodyguard into what looked like a small square room repurposed into a coat closet. In a graffiti-covered art squat? A tiny part of my brain asked. A coat closet. Is it art? And damn it, damn it. Because it was December, or because it was an art installation, who knew, this closet was filled with coats. I hid myself behind a floor-length fur, and though I couldn't see anything, I heard the two of them talking just fine.
"I've watched you since you come in," he was rumbling. "You bright up the room."
"It's hard to miss you, too, you know. God, you must work out. Look at your arms. You're so much stronger than my bodyguard, and better looking," she giggled. "Do you want a job?"
I couldn't make a diagnosis. I'd never seen Holmes on coke. I didn't know what it did to her. What it did to anyone, actually. What happened in the movies? Didn't it make you talk quickly, feel more confident? Was that heroin?
"I have many years contract with my employer. He is angry man."
"Oh, I'm just teasing. He isn't here, is he? I don't want you to get in trouble."
Sometimes it made my head spin, thinking how much of Holmes's spy work had to do with telling stupid men what they wanted to hear.
"Tonight, no. He sent me to check on a man who paints for him, but he is not here either. He is stupid, does not return his calls, and he owes him work. This will get the man into trouble. I will go to East Side Gallery after, since sometimes he is there."
A rustling sound, like he was backing her into a rack of coats.
"You come with? After we party?"
"This is a party. We could party now," she murmured.
My head washed with static. "She can handle this," I told myself. "She always handles it." A wet sound, like kissing. The rustling grew louder.
"Wait."
And she sounded so unsure, so scared that I had to shove my fists into my pockets.
"My old boyfriend is here sometimes. I don't want him to hurt you."
"Hurt me?"
This was apparently a new concept.
"No, not that he could, but I don't want there to be a scene."
A sly note in her voice.
"I broke his heart. Have you seen him? He's really tall and handsome. Older. He has slicked back black hair."
Leander.
"Him? You date him?"
"It was a mistake,"
she babbled, a girl backtracking.
"I'm sorry, a mistake. I'm just worried about you."
"No, you don't worry about him. My employer has taken care of it, yes? Now."
That wet sound again.
No, a different wet sound, and a man's tortured wheeze, a whimper, and before I fully knew what I was doing, I had shoved myself out from my hiding place, fists up.
In time to watch Holmes slam her elbow into his throat a second time, he slid down to the floor, dragging an avalanche of coats down with him.
"He tried to reach up my dress."
With a shaky hand, she straightened her wig.
"Let's go. Now."
We made a break for the stairs. Even now, even with her mouth tight and trembling, she was playing the part she'd assigned herself, what looked like some blonde version of Marie Helene, down to the clothing. Was that how she crafted a persona? Ran her scanner eyes over some girl she'd just met, and then recreated her, hours later, with a wig and a set of painted-on freckles? Behind us, a buzz kicked up.
When I turned to look, I saw a man come tearing out of the coat closet, only to be grabbed and hauled away by...
August?
Foster, Holmes said, and we pounded down the brightly painted stairs, past the burned-out chandelier and the door with its painted eyes. In moments, we were outside and tearing down the hill. But I hadn't paid attention when we'd first arrived, and there was nothing around us, just the lumbering shapes of factories and trucks stretching out to the skyline.
"Where are we?"
I asked her, but she grabbed me by the elbow and hauled me along. At the end of the block, she skidded to a stop and pulled me around the corner of a warehouse. I searched my pockets for my phone.
"I have something to tell you about August."
No response.
"He's in touch with his brother. He's been talking to Hadrian, I think, all this time."
Nothing still.
"Holmes?"
She'd knelt on the curb, her hands braced against the concrete. Once, twice, she threw up into the street. I got down beside her to hold back her hair, the long strands of the wig cold and stiff in my fingers. A cold wind snapped down the street. She didn't shiver, but any minute now it was going to snow.
"Are you okay?"
"Fine," she coughed, then pulled off her wig and threw it to the ground. The wig cap, the false eyelashes. Without them, she was almost herself again, a girl in cast-off black clothes with desperate eyes.
"Can you call a car?"
"I don't have any reception," I told her.
"Yours?" "I'll ask Milo."
"Isn't he in Thailand?" But she didn't say anything else for a long minute. Instead, she looked out across the road, stretching out and up to the art squat. The wind kicked up again, scattering her hair across her face. Wheels on gravel. As we both watched, a black town car came around the corner. It didn't have plates. "I wonder who we bugged this time," I muttered, opening the door. "You or me?" The driver was another of Milo's silent, dark-dressed men. After we settled in the back seat, Holmes waved at him.
"Home."
We were quiet for a long minute. Absently, she asked the driver for a plastic bag. He handed her one as though he had a supply on hand. I wasn't sure what to say after the way we'd left things back at Greystone. I turned it over in my head. An apology? An interrogation? How to tell her about what I'd learned from Leander's letters? She met with him, the last one said. They talked about how things would change at her house. Should I start there? At first it seemed like we wouldn't talk about it at all. She took out her phone and began tapping away, to who I didn't know, and only when she'd finished did she speak in a hoarse, cruel voice that I'd only heard once before.
"You want to talk about this?"
I sighed. "I need to tell you something about August." She drew a breath.
"Watson, if you're telling me you're concerned about his loyalties, I'm uninterested. He might be in touch with his family. He might be unwilling to babysit me. I don't care what reason you've dug up, but at the moment I'd rather rely on him than you. This brings us to my second point. One moment."
Very neatly, she threw up again into the plastic bag.
"Two," she said. "When you told me to get out, I did. This is me getting myself out. I want out. I don't want this horrifying iteration of you that no longer has any faith in my ability to keep a handle on myself because I am having boy problems."
She said those last words with a snarl.
"Am I made of glass now? You come to find me and you don't tell me straight off that you've gotten new information about my uncle."
"How did you know that?" Holmes stared at me like I was a moron.
"You're honestly asking me that question?"
"Holmes, August is talking to his brother again, and I don't care if he thinks he's doing us, me, a favor. It's incredibly stupid. What did he do, wander into his consulting rooms dressed like a bookseller? Surprise, I'm not dead, and oh look, we're recreating history."
"Shut up, Watson. Just get out. Look, we're at a red light. I'm sure you could find your way home. Do you have reception to call a cab?"
She glanced again into the rearview mirror. The driver didn't look back.
"Do you need me to come with and hold your hand?"
I set my jaw. She was coming at me like a bulldog, in the back of a town car that smelled like puke and was taking us to God knows where, but there was no way I'd let her get a rise out of me. Holmes glanced again out the back, then at the driver.
"Why do you keep looking out the window?" We're passing the Berlin Wall. Are you completely helpless with geography, or do you really not know where we are?
Look it up. We're not far from Greystone HQ.